Hey there, rock stars. This is Punky Meadows of Angel. Eric Jackson Lurie is not the only one on the naughty list. Wrap me up, baby. WRCT, Pittsburgh, 88.3 FM.
When it is cold and it's snowing outside, sitting with you by the fireside, there's no place that I'd rather be than on this Christmas night, just you and me.
from Punky Meadows, Christmas single he released last year called Wrap Me Up. And no, that is not Punky singing. He only plays guitar, but a great tune. Got a few requests for that tonight. I had the opportunity to talk with Punky about a week ago, and he told me, he said, EJL, be aware, be alert, because New Angel is coming out soon. Woohoo! Heard it first here on WRCT. You listen to Course and Session, heard here every Thursday night from 8 to 10:30 in the background. If you like jazz, if you're proud of living in Pittsburgh, well, find yourself a copy of Walt Harper's Open Pantry Christmas record. And that's what we've got in the background. Killing it on Jingle Bells. Great, great jazz Christmas record from the great Walt Harper. Before Punky Meadows, you heard Sammy Hagar, Santa's Going South for Christmas. Stephen Piercy with a killer version of Feliz Navidad. Tommy James, his most recent Christmas album came out a couple years ago. That track was called I Love Christmas. And we open all up with the boys and Lynyrd Skynyrd, Santa's Messing with the Kid. You know, the Greater Pittsburgh Community Food Bank is asking you to join the campaign to end hunger. The food bank serves 120,000 people each year, children, seniors, working families. But thousands more in southwestern Pennsylvania face hunger every day. You can make a donation, have a food drive, or sign up to volunteer. You can visit their website and learn more about hunger in your community and what you can do about it at www.pittsburghfoodbank.org. So I had the radio on at work today, and I caught Mandel Richards' show, Whiskey Before Breakfast, and he was killing it. Did a celebration of the music of Mal Rollo, who passed away just last week. And I'll tell you what, we're lucky to have him because that show is a gem. Talking about Whiskey Before Breakfast. It's a fiddle tune and a radio show, not a prescription from your podiatrist. Tune in to WRCT Wednesdays at 11 a.m. for Whiskey Before Breakfast, an eclectic folk and roots radio program. And then stick around for an hour of bluegrass at 1 p.m. Wednesdays on The Black Diamond Show. Where else? But right here on 88.3 FM WRCT Pittsburgh. And streaming at WRCT.org. And if you're enjoying tonight's show, hearing some Christmas tunes that you're going to hear nowhere else and not hearing the same 50 songs you hear everywhere else, well, you can hear a replay of this show this Friday morning at 1:30 in the morning. And again, Christmas Day. Christmas Day falls on a Thursday at 8 o'clock. We're going to play it again. And then again Sunday at 10 p.m. Replays of Courts in Session right here on WRCT. So the Reverend Horton Heat is coming to Pittsburgh. He's coming in April to Preserving Underground. And he came out with one of my favorite Christmas albums. It's called We Three Kings. This is going out to Jack and Stephanie. Send a big thank you out to Pretty Stephanie for that Lynyrd Skynyrd gift she sent me. This is Santa Looked a Lot Like Daddy.
gonna spy. If it rained there, it's really no how to fly.
So I'm offering this simple. There we go. Helps if we play the record at the right speed. It's from 1 to 92. Yeah, that sounds a lot better. Well, ladies and gentlemen, it's so much fun to do this yet another year and to get close to sign out for another year. 2 weeks, we're going to do our New Year's special, counting down the top five most requested new songs of 2025, as requested by you. But now it's time. We always close out our Christmas show with this. It's become a bit of a tradition. This is a Charlie Daniels Band with a Carolina Christmas Carol. I'm your rocking attorney, Eric Jackson Lurie, wishing you and yours a very Merry Christmas. Want to remind you to take care of each other, be kind to each other, and be proud to be American. Good night, Pittsburgh. Merry Christmas.
Offering this simple phrase. Kids from 1 to 92.
Hi, I'm Charlie Daniels. Well, it's that time of year again. Time for Christmas trees and jingle bells and mistletoe and Santa Claus. But remember, don't be distracted. Jesus is the reason for the season. That's what it's all about, Charlie Brown. From all of us here at the CDB organization and Daniel's family, we wish you a very, very Merry Christmas. God bless you. Tell you right up front, I believe in Santa Claus. You can believe or not believe, but I'm here to tell you for a fact that there is a Santa Claus, and he does bring toys and stuff like that on Christmas Eve night. I know, it sounds like I've had too much eggnog, don't it? All I ask is that you wait till I get through telling my story before you make up your mind. When I was a kid, Christmas time had a magic to it that no other season of the year had. There was just something in the air, something you couldn't put your finger on, but it was there, and it affected everybody. It seemed like everybody smiled and laughed more at that time of the year, even the people who didn't hardly smile and laugh the rest of the year. You reckon it's gonna snow? I sure do wish it'd snow this year. You reckon it's gonna snow? Heck no, it's not gonna snow. As far as I know, it ain't never snowed in Wilmington, North Carolina at Christmas time in the whole history of man. It seemed like everybody in the world had snow at Christmas time except us. In the funny papers, Nancy and Sluggo and Little Orphan Annie had snow to frolic around in at Christmas time. The Christmas cards had snow. Bing Crosby even had snow to sing about, but not one flake fell on Wilmington, North Carolina. But that didn't dampen our spirits one little bit. Our family celebrated Christmas to the hilt. We were a big, close-knit family, and we'd gather up at Grandma's house every year. My grandparents lived on a farm in Bladen County, about 50 miles from Wilmington, and I just couldn't wait to get up there. They lived in a great big old farmhouse, and every Christmas they'd fill it up with their children and grandchildren. We'd always stay from the night of the 23rd through the morning of the 26th. They'd be Uncle Clyde and Aunt Martha and Uncle Lacey and Aunt Selma and Uncle Leroy and Aunt Molly and Uncle Stuart and Aunt Opal and my mama and daddy, Ernest and Nadine. I won't go into how many children was there, but take my word for it, there was a bunch. There'd be people sleeping all over that big old house. We kids would sleep on pallets on the floor, and we'd giggle and play till some of the grown-ups would come up and make us be quiet. All the usual ground rules about eating were off those days at Grandma's house. You could eat as much pine cake and candy as you could hold, and your mama wouldn't say a word to you. My grandma'd cook from sunup to sundown and love every minute of it. She had cakes and pies and candy and fruit and nuts just setting out all the time. And on top of that, she'd cook 3 big meals a day. I mean, we eat like pigs. Christmas is also the only time that my granddaddy'd take a drink. It was a southern custom of the time not to drink in front of small children, so granddaddy kept his drinking whiskey hid in the barn. When he wanted to go out there and get him a snore, he'd say he had to go see if the mare had had her foal yet. It was a good, good time. A little old-fashioned by some people's standards, but it suited us just fine. If I'm not mistaken, it was the year I was 5 years old that my cousin Buford told me that there wasn't any Santa Claus, and Buford was about 9 at the time. He always was a mean-natured cuss. He still is. Well, I just refused to believe him. I said, "You're telling a great big fib, Buford Ray, because Santa Claus comes to see me every Christmas right here at Grandma and Granddaddy's house." "That ain't Santa Claus. That's your mom and daddy." Well, one thing led to another, and I got so upset about the prospect of no Santa Claus that I went running into the house crying. "Grandma, Grandma, Buford says there ain't no Santa Claus. There is a Santa Claus, ain't there, Grandma?" "Of course he is, Curtis. Buford's just joking with you." Aunt Selma heard me talking to Grandma and walked to the door. "Buford Ray, get yourself in this house right this minute." When he came in, Aunt Selma grabbed him by the ear and led him in the front room and swatted his rear end. Granddaddy was also a big defender of Santa Claus. He'd talk about Santa Claus like he was a personal friend of his. And the more he went to check on the mare, the more he talked about Santa Claus, or Sandy Claus, as he called him. "Yeah, children, old Sandy Claus will be hooking up them reindeer and heading on down this way before long. Wonder what he's going to bring this year." He'd have us so excited by the time we went to bed that I reckon visions of sugar plums ever danced in anybody's heads, it was ours. Christmas Eve night, after we eat about as much supper as we could hold, we'd go in the front room. There was always a big log fire crackling in the fireplace, and Granddad always say the same thing. "Children, do y'all know why we have Christmas every year? 'Cause that's when the baby Jesus was born." "That's right. We're celebrating the Lord's birthday. Do y'all know where he was born at?" "In Bethlehem," we'd all chime in. "That's right. He was born in a stable in Bethlehem almost 2,000 years ago." Then Granddaddy'd put on his spectacles and read St. Luke's version of the Christmas story. Then after we'd had family prayer, Granddaddy'd always get a twinkle in his eye. "I reckon I better step out the barn and see if that old mare had her baby yet." There was always a chorus of, "Can I go with you, Granddaddy?" "Y'all better stay in here by the fire. It's mighty cold outside. I'll be right back." When Granddaddy came back in the house, he'd always say, "I was on my way back from the barn a while ago, and I heard something sound like bells tinkling way back off yonder in the woods. I just can't figure out why bells would be ringing back in the woods this time of the night. It's Santa Claus. It's Santa Claus." "Well, I never thought about that. I wonder if it was old Sandy Claus. You children better get to bed. You know, he won't come to see you as long as you're awake." Then it was time to say goodnight. All the grandchildren would go around hugging all the grown-ups. "Good night, Grandma. Good night, Granddaddy. Good night, Uncle Clyde. Good night, Aunt Molly," and so forth. We'd always try to stay awake, lying on the pallets until Santa Claus got there, but we always lost the battle. It sounded like the Third World War at Grandma's house on Christmas morning. There was cap pistols going off and baby dolls crying and all the children hollering at the top of their lungs. By the time the next school year started, I was 6 years old in the first grade, and I kept thinking about what Buford had said. I didn't want to believe it, but it kept slipping into the back door of my mind. At school, Buford was 3 grades ahead of me, but I'd still see him sometimes, and every time he'd see me that whole year, he'd make it a point to rub it in about Santa Claus. He'd do something like get me around a bunch of his older buddies and say, "Hey, you fellas, Curtis still believes in Santa Claus," and they'd all laugh and point. Away from adult persuasion, I guess Buford finally wore me out. I returned to Grandma's house the next year, not believing that there was a Santa Claus. Christmas lost a little of its mystique. Oh, I still enjoyed it. I even pretended that I believed in Sandy Claus for Granddaddy's benefit, but it wasn't the same. Well, as you know, time marches on. Children grow up and leave home, including me. I was living in Denver, Colorado, married with a child, and I hadn't been home for Christmas since our little daughter had been born. Dawn was 3 that year, and this would be the first time she would ever really know about Santa Claus, and she was some kind of excited. We had the best time shopping for her, buying all the little toys she wanted. Daddy called me about 3 weeks before Christmas and said, "Son, you know your grandparents are getting old. They've requested that all the children, grandchildren, and great-grandchildren come home the way we used to. Can you make it, son?" "We'll be there, Daddy." I couldn't think of a better place in the whole world for little Dawn to spend her first real Christmas, so we packed up, headed for North Carolina. Grandma was 82 years old, but she still cooked all day long, and she still enjoyed every minute of it. Granddaddy was 84, but he still had a twinkle in his eye and a mare in the barn. The old house was fuller than ever, with a whole new generation of children in it. Even Buford had married, but he didn't have any children. He didn't want any. One of my cousins said he figured Buford was too stingy to have children. Buford was still the same, except that he'd changed from a boy with a mean nature to a full-grown man with a cynical nature and a know-it-all attitude. Just before we went into the front room for family prayer and the reading of the Christmas story, I overheard him say to somebody, "I don't know why Granddaddy keeps filling them children's heads full of Santa Claus nonsense. I think it's ridiculous. If I had children, I wouldn't even let him tell them all that junk." I looked hard at Buford. I never had liked him, and I liked him even less now. Our little daughter was so excited when Granddaddy started talking about Santa Claus that she jumped up and down and clapped her hands. When I took her up to bed, there was pure excitement in those big brown eyes. "Santa Claus is coming, Daddy. Santa Claus is coming, Daddy." I got a warm feeling all over, and I sure was glad to be back at Grandma's house at Christmas time. After all the children had gone to sleep, the grown-ups started going out to their cars to get the toys they'd brought for Santa Claus to leave under the Christmas tree. I decided to wait until everybody else had finished before I put out Dawn's presents. This was a special time, and I wanted to enjoy it. After everybody had gone up to bed, I went out to the car to get Dawn's toys, and to my shock, I couldn't find them. I ran back in the house to my wife, Sylvia. "Where'd you pack Dawn's Christmas presents?" "I thought you packed them." I was close to panic, but I didn't want Sylvia to know it, so I said, "Oh, well, you're just going back to bed, honey, and I'll look again. I probably just overlooked them." I kissed my wife goodnight and went back downstairs. I knew I hadn't overlooked them. We'd somehow forgot to pack them, and they were 2,000 miles away in Denver, Colorado. I was a miserable man. I just didn't feel like I could face little Dawn the next morning. She'd be so disappointed. All the other children had the toys that Santa had brought, and my beloved little daughter wouldn't have anything. How could I have been so dumb? Here it was, 12 o'clock, Christmas Eve night. All the stores closed, everybody in bed, and me without a single present for little Dawn. I was heartbroken. I went into the front room and sat by the dying fire, dejected and hopeless. I don't know how long I sat there staring at the embers, but sometime later on I heard a rustle behind me and somebody said, "You got a match, son?" I turned around, almost fell on the floor. Standing not 10 feet from me was a short, fat little man in a red suit with a long white beard and a pipe sticking out of his mouth. I couldn't move. I couldn't speak. He looked at me and chuckled. "Have you got a match, son?" I ran out and I wanted to get this pipe going. When I finally got my voice back, all I could say was, "Who are you?" "Well, people call me by different names in different parts of the world, but around here they call me Santa Claus." "No, I mean, who are you really?" "I just told you, son. How about that match?" I stumbled to the mantelpiece and got a kitchen match and gave it to him. "Much obliged, son." He stood there lighting his pipe with me looking at him like he was a ghost or something. "How'd you get in here?" "Oh, I got my ways. I thought you were supposed to slide down the chimney." "That's a common misconception. Would you slide down a chimney with a fire at the bottom?" "Well, no, I mean, no, sir." "Well, neither would I. How'd you get here?" "I got a sturdy sleigh and the finest team of reindeer a man could have."
"But we ain't got no snow."
Santa Claus laughed so hard that his considerable belly shook. "I don't need snow. Half the places I go in the world don't have snow. Besides, I like to get out of the snow once in a while. We have it year-round at the North Pole, you know."
"You mean you really live at the North Pole?"
"Of course, I've always lived at the North Pole. Don't you know anything about Santa Claus, son?"
"Well, yeah, but I thought it was a big put-on for the children."
"That's the trouble with you grown-ups. You think that everything you can't see is a put-on. It's a shame grown people can't be more like children. They don't have any trouble believing in me."
"You mean you really got a sleigh with reindeer named Donner and Blitzen and stuff like that?"
"That's right, son. There's Comet and Cupid and Donner and Blitzen, Dasher and Dancer and Prancer and Vixen. Of course, there's no Rudolph with the red nose. I don't know who came up with that one. Rudolph really is a put-on."
"What are you doing here? Why'd you come?"
"Because there's a little girl in this house who believes in me very much. Now, she'd be mighty disappointed to wake up Christmas morning and have nothing under the tree."
"You mean you came all the way here just because one little girl believes in you?"
"That's right, son. There's magic in believing. Besides, she's not the only one in this house who believes in me."
"Who else?"
"Why, your grandfather, of course."
"You mean Granddaddy wasn't putting us on all those years? He really believed in you?"
"Of course he believed in me."
"Well, why do you do this?"
"It's my way of celebrating the most important birthday in the history of man. Our Lord has given us so much. How can we do less?" Santa Claus consulted a piece of paper he pulled out of his pocket and started taking a doll and other toys out of a big bag he brought with him. "Well, I gotta go, son. I got a lot of stops to make before sunup. It's really been nice talking to you. Thanks for the match. Can I help you with your bag, Santa Claus? No, that's all right, son. I'm used to carrying it. I walked outside with him. Where's your sleigh, Santa Claus? It's parked right over there in the edge of the woods. You can come over and see it if you'd like. I started walking over to his sleigh with him, but then I had a thought. I'm going to have to miss seeing your sleigh and reindeer. Thank you so very much. You saved my life. God bless you, Santa Claus. I'll see you next year. God bless you too, son, and a Merry Christmas to you and yours. Santa Claus started across the yard toward his sleigh, and I went running back in the house like a wild man. I raced up the stairs. Buford, Buford, get up. What's the matter? Is the house on fire? No, but hurry. Come on out on the upstairs porch. Buford grumbled as he got up and followed me out on the upstairs porch. But the heck you won't. It's cold out here. Just hush up and listen. When we listened for a full minute, nothing happened. You're crazy. I'm going back to bed. Buford, if you go back in the house, you're going to miss something I want you above all people to see. We waited for a little while longer, and I'd almost given up when I heard it. It was just like a little tingle at first, hanging on the frosty air and getting louder by the second. It was sleigh bells. Buford looked at me and said, Curtis, is this some kind of joke or something? No, Buford, I swear it ain't. Just wait a minute now. The sound of sleigh bells were getting louder, and Buford's face was getting whiter. You got somebody out there doing that, ain't you? Admit it, you got somebody out there, ain't you? I didn't say a word. All of a sudden, it sounded like somebody flushed a covey of quail. That sleigh came up out of the woods and headed west, hovering just above the treetops. Buford was speechless. I thought he was going to pass out. He held onto the banister and took deep breaths. Even if you believe me so far, I know you ain't going to believe this next part, but it really happened. Santa Claus made a big circle and turned and flew around the house. I bet he went over 20 feet from the upstairs porch when he passed by me and Buford. Old Santa Claus could really handle them reindeer. And then he headed west again, moving in a pretty good clip this time. I even hate to tell you this next part because you'll think I took it right out of a book, but I didn't. Anyway, just about the time he was getting out of our hearing, he hollered, Merry Christmas, everybody! And then he was gone. Curtis, you know where Granddad keeps that bottle hid in the barn? I need me a drink. I don't believe Buford ever told anybody about seeing Santa Claus, and I know I didn't, not until now, but I just had to tell somebody about it. It's been hard keeping it to myself all these years. I'm a granddaddy myself now. That little girl that caused all this to happen with her faith in Santa Claus is grown and married, has a 3-year-old girl and a 5-year-old boy. Me and Sylvia moved back to North Carolina many years ago and bought a big old farmhouse. Now my grandchildren come and spend Christmas with me and their grandmother. There's not as many of us as there was at Grandma's house, but we have just as big a time, and we celebrate Christmas just as hard. In fact, Christmas is just about the only time of year I'll take a drink. Always get me a pint of old Granddad at Christmas time. Since the grandchildren are so small, I don't like to drink in front of them, so I keep my drinking whiskey hid out in the barn. When I go out there and get me a snort, I always tell the grandchildren I got to go see if the cow's got corn. Of course, all the grown-ups know why I'm going out to the barn, or at least they think they do. I always make my last trip to the barn after I read the Christmas story and had family prayer. Everybody thinks I'm going out to get me a snort, but they're wrong. I'm just going out to hear the sleigh bells ring.
I'm tradition's Halloween. But let's take off our masks this time and show ourselves true.
One in five Americans experience emotional and mental health challenges, but many of us don't know how to ask for help.
At the American Psychiatric Association Foundation, we work every day to eliminate stigma and advance mental health. Visit mentallyhealthynation.org to learn more.
You're listening to WRCT, Pittsburgh. And you are listening to WRCT Pittsburgh 88.3 FM. My name is Steve, your host for the Deep Blues Hour. I'm bringing you 60 minutes of classic and traditional blues. And in this hour, we're going to hear from Harold Burridge, playing for the Cobra record label back in the 1950s. Also, Mr. Reverend Gary Davis, recorded at home back in the day with his fine Delta blues gospel music. Plus, we'll hear from Big Walter Horton, I should say, on the harmonica. We'll be all coming along your way here on the Deep Blues Hour. We're going to start off, though, with Mr. Sunnyland Slim from an Evidence release called Chicago Jump. This is Never Picked No Cotton from 1986. This is Sunnyland Slim here on the Deep Blues Hour.
My daddy never had much money.
very light.
RCT is supported by Spack Brothers Pizza, located at 5107 Penn Avenue in Bloomfield. Spack Brothers Pizza offers pizza, hoagies and wings, salads, and vegan and vegetarian alternatives. They use no refined sugars in its sauce and unbleached flour in its dough. Spack Brothers offers both takeout and delivery. For more information, you can email them at spackhelp@gmail.com or visit their website at spackbrothers.com. If you are interested in underwriting for WRCT, you can email pr@wrcteam.org for more information about promotional exchanges and other partnership opportunities.
Give me one more shot, bartender, just before I go. I need a shot of whiskey and I need a shot of gin. One more shot. One more shot. Just one more shot. I will knock my own self out. Give me one more shot. 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 Just one more shot. I will knock my own self out.
Shoot tombstone full of wine, balls and chain. I'm drinking TNT, I'm smoking down a mine. I hope some screwball start a fire. Oh, I'm ready, ready as anybody can be. I am ready for you, I hope you're ready for me. All your pretty little chicks with your curly hair, I know you feel like I ain't nowhere. But stop what you're doing, baby, come over here. I prove to you, baby, that I ain't no swell. Because I'm ready, ready as anybody can be. I am ready for you, I hope you're ready for me. I feel so good, I want you to know. One more drink, I wish you would. It takes a whole lot of loving to make me feel good. I'm ready, ready as anybody. I am ready for you, I hope you're ready for me.
Mr. Muddy Waters, recording for Chess Records back in 1954. That was called I'm Ready. Before Muddy Waters, J.B. Lenore gave us a tune called Give Me One More Shot, recorded in 1976 and on his Chess LP called Natural Man. J.B. Lenore right there. All right, up next we're going to hear from Nick Curran from a Texas Jamboree record entitled Nightlife Boogie. This is She's 15. Nick Curran here on the Deep Blues Hour.
rock me like she's one in three. But now, girl, 15 is a loving machine. She knows just what to do to make her daddy scream. I'm in love with a girl who's way too young for me. Well, she's only 15, but she can rock me like she's 23. We'll be right back.
little boogie tune right there from Little Brother Montgomery. And all it is called Boogie. That's from a Paula and Flywright CD entitled Chicago Piano. Features Little Brother Montgomery and others right there. Nice little boogie there from Little Brother. We also heard from Lloyd Price from his release Laudy. That is Where You At from Lloyd Price. Did you know that a single ember that escapes from a wildfire can travel over a mile carrying a world of trouble? It can land, ignite, and destroy your home and community. You can't control where that ember will land, but you can control what happens before it does. With simple steps to adapt to wildfire, like clearing areas around buildings, knowing community safe zones, and making sure your local fire departments are prepared, you and your neighbors can help protect your homes and community from more wildfire damage. Becoming fire adapted is more than one person can take on alone. It takes a community to protect a home. Visit fireadapted.org today for more tips and tools to help protect your home and community from wildfires. Get fire adapted. A public service message brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service and WRCT. Let's hear next from Mr. Harold Burridge from his disc called Messed Up. This is She Knocks Me Out. Harold Burridge here on the Deep Blues Hour.
Baby, cause she knocked me out.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Crazy about you, baby. Every time it leaves me mind. Give me fever when you hold me tight. No, I'm really gonna love you right. The way you love me makes me wanna shout. Crazy about you, baby, cause she knocked me out.
Oh, yeah.
My one and only pride. Jump and shout. Crazy about you, baby, cause you knocked me out.
Oh, yeah.